Welcome to the Plant with Pager podcast, the podcast that covers sales, marketing, and recruitment, all while having a beer. Enjoy. Hey everyone, thanks for joining me for another episode of Pint with Pager. Today I'm joined by the legendary, and he's going to live up to that, Ashley Jones from Marketing Showcase. Ashley, would you mind introducing yourself for the people at home?
Yeah, thank you. I'm not quite sure legendary is the, certainly the first time I've been described as that in a while. Certainly in this circle, maybe in a couple of others, particularly in the pub. But I look after Marketing Showcase, which is a series of regional marketing events for, funnily enough, marketing professionals. And Darren, I think we met in the middle of COVID when I was running virtual events, and now we're happy to be back on the road running regular events for marketers around the country.
Absolutely. Now, the reason I said legendary is I happen to know what you're drinking. Would you mind sharing?
Well, I thought I'd keep on brand, and when I'm invited to a pint with Pager, but it's at 10 o'clock in the morning, I've gone for a pint of coffee, which... it looks repulsive, but you know, I'm gonna do it for the podcast, for the love of the podcast.
It's all for the podcast. I've got a feeling you're going to be buzzing for the rest of the day.
Yeah. I need it. I've got a 2-year-old at home, and he doesn't sleep much. So, yeah, that's a pretty regular amount.
Just doing the maths, but that's a lockdown baby.
It is a lockdown baby. It's a lockdown baby indeed. Yeah. He's lovely though. He's lovely.
Brilliant. So what I want to jump into is B2B events and what makes a good event, because I think it's really easy to put on an event. It's very hard to put on a good event. So what makes a good one?
Yeah, it's funny, actually. My wife, she's a hairdresser, and they've got a saying in their salon where it's a cheap haircut isn't good and a good haircut isn't cheap. And I think on similar vibes with events, you know, there's events and then there's events. Do you know what I mean? So I think what makes a good event is people and the mix of people you can get in the room. And that's often defined in the event industry, or it's confused in the event industry with numbers. But I'm pretty passionate at saying if you can get the right mix of people in the room and create a really good vibe where they're buzzing off each other, you create a really good event. It's supposed to be an experience at the end of the day. And I think people define that experience.
Absolutely. And if you were just starting out, you know, you haven't got the budget for Marketing Showcase, you're just starting out, you've got to put on an event, what would be your top tips for that person on how to get started?
It's a good question. I don't think it's budget. If I'm honest, I can do a Marketing Showcase with a pretty bootstrap budget. We're not a massive company by any means. We're a small family business. So budget's always, you know, very, very tight for us. And we're always watching the pennies. But top tips would be, I mean, getting to the point, like sharing my secrets, email marketing is the key to promoting events. And I think that's that's how you drive getting people there. So just sending out loads of email invites to the right people maybe goes against a bit of what I was saying there about quantity, but part of it is a numbers game. So sending out invites by email would be a big thing. Leveraging your networks, getting on LinkedIn, sharing all your good content. And I think, Darren, last thing I'd probably say just quickly, I've got more and more vocal on LinkedIn over the last few years since lockdown or just before. And it's amazing how many people comment on how much bigger our events have got just because I've been posting more on LinkedIn. The stats wouldn't necessarily dictate that, but just because I'm more visible, people seem to be going, whoa, hold on, the events are looking way bigger. It's actually just that I'm promoting them better. So my other key thing would be get on LinkedIn, share loads of content that you're going to be hosting at the event. Pictures, if you can get hold of them from previous editions, or leveraging pictures of your speakers that are getting involved, and just sharing lots of different media and what people can expect would be a good start.
Nice. You touched on personal branding, so I'd be amiss if I didn't talk about it because I'm very passionate about it. How's that compared to your brand marketing you were doing previously?
In what sense?
So it sounds like before you were just promoting on like the company pages, you weren't posting on your personal LinkedIn. How's the impact been on your personal LinkedIn versus the company?
Sure. I think I was, like many people are, a bit scared to start really pushing what my thoughts and feelings were. I almost felt like on LinkedIn, it's like you're going to get laughed at if you share an opinion or a thought, if it's a bit controversial or it doesn't go with the traditional narrative that you see. It's a complete fallacy. It's the total opposite. The more you can go on there and chat about what you think and give your opinions and your thoughts, you might maybe rub a few people up the wrong way on the journey. But I just encourage people to go out there and say what they actually feel or what they think about different subjects. And I always try and tie it into what I do, because that's a natural thing for me. But I think how it's altered is coming away from that kind of copy and paste structure of a LinkedIn post or a personal brand post where you kind of say, oh, it's pancake day, here's me flipping a pancake, to actually something you care about and something you want to post about and something that you believe in and sharing thoughts and opinions. So get rid of that kind of safety net and just crack on with it, really, is what I'd say. That's what I've done.
Stop being the, I think a lot of people think that, you know, don't have the right to say it. No one's interested in what I've got to say, when actually that's not true at all.
I'm just about to take a sip from this and I'm on camera and it looks awful. It weirdly tastes different out of a pint glass coffee.
Don't know, I just don't think it wasn't made for a pint glass, was it? Let's be honest.
True.
So when we first met, it was during lockdown. How did you find the virtual events during that time?
Being honest, I hated it. I thrive in the live event setting, you know, and the virtual events, our hands was kind of forced. You know, we had to do something to survive as a business. We you know, and that's the closest thing we could do. And I'm not saying that in a way that I don't think what we provided was valuable, because I do. We got quite good at hosting the webinars. We were getting thousands of people watching webinars regularly. But as soon as live events came back, there was something just telling me it's like, I'm not enjoying doing that. I'd far rather be planning live events and getting people together, which obviously was a hard thing to do during COVID. But I just think back to it and, you know, it's just such a hard time. Just weird. It feels like a different lifetime now. But I didn't like the virtual events thing. And I think, being totally honest, I think if most organisers are, it was a means to an end. And it just, the concept of virtual event, and certainly virtual exhibitions, which was something that we tried fairly early on, it just doesn't work. It just doesn't fit. And that's me going out on a limb and saying it from my experience. Maybe some people have made it work, but the vast majority of people I've spoken to, and myself included, doing it, it was just terrible.
At that time, there was a lot of talk about how the metaverse is going to change events, and people are going to have their own, you know, character in metaverse. Facebook went fully in on it, right? I haven't seen that come to fruition. I think if anything, the human race has gone, no, we want to see people again. Are you seeing the same thing, or do you still think there's a place in the metaverse in the future of events?
So just to kind of give context, virtual events, virtual exhibitions have been around for years, pre-COVID. You know, there was technology where you could log on to your virtual conference and walk around and go and engage with a stand. I want to say that was happening early 2010s, maybe even before that. I might be wrong, but it's been around for a long time and it never took off. And I believe perhaps for a reason. Now the world changes, metaverse becomes more and more common, perhaps. I'm not an expert in that field, but perhaps as more of the world adopt it, then it plays more of a role in events and other experiences that we find in business. But I think there's something irreplaceable about face-to-face. And that's why I think the virtual exhibitions thing didn't work at the time. And I think there's something, you know, we're sat here between a screen, but if I'm honest, I'd rather be in the same room as you doing this. You know, logistics.
Having a real beer.
That's what I mean, having a real beer. Perhaps not at 10 o'clock. Or definitely not a pint of coffee, that would be.
I'll meet you in an airport. It's acceptable in an airport.
Yeah, true. But, you know, there's that, I don't think that's ever going to change. So how that affects the metaverse, how that affects what we do with virtual events, I just think that's up for the world to define. But right now, I can't see it really getting mass adoption anytime soon.
No, and I agree with you. You know, I think people are actually, they don't want that right now. They want to go back to how things were. And I think we are, largely. I think largely people are going back to how they were pre-COVID. What were you doing before Marketing Showcase? How did you end up doing what you're doing?
Yeah, so Framework Media, which is the company that runs Marketing Showcase, is a family business. So my dad launched Framework Media and the events business in 1990. And when I left school, I was working in a golf shop And golf's my passion. I love golf. If I'm not doing work or looking after kids, I'm on the golf course. So it's kind of like, do I keep working in a golf shop and go down the whole retail route? Or my dad offered me the opportunity to come into the family business. And I did that, really. So before Marketing Showcase and before Framework Media, I was in a golf shop.
Amazing. Now, golf was your passion. So what's your handicap?
I'm a seven. I'm a casual seven.
Decent.
It's not bad, but there's a lot better than me. But I admit, to be fair, a pint with Pager is normally a pint on the golf course. It's really a social thing for me. It's like, yeah, we've got a good group of mates that play golf regularly, or as much as we can get out there. And it's just such a lush thing to do when you're kind of with your mates and you're walking around and you're getting in the open air. So, yeah.
We work in, Pager works predominantly or largely with staffing agencies, recruitment agencies, and they love a golf day. Have you organised golf days before? How do they normally work?
Yeah, I haven't. It's been one of those things that's in the back of my head, like, yeah, let's get a golf day together. I've just never quite found the right opportunity to merge it in with what we do. Or if anything, I work so hard running the events that I'm doing, running another event to do with golf for a bit of a jolly kind of just hasn't quite hit the mark yet. But yeah, definitely maybe on the horizon. I don't mind getting an invite to golf days, to be fair. That's kind of my vibe with it at the moment.
Anyone listening that's got a golf day, reach out to Ashley. Afternoon, because he's going to be high on coffee.
Yeah. I'll be jittering on the first tee. Like.
You won't have a good swing. So what's if we come back to some of the recent events you've done, how have they changed since COVID? How's the in-person ones changed since that bloody COVID?
I mean, if we step back and just look at it, we've doubled in size in the last year. And when I try and work out why it is, I think there's a lot of small changes that we've made that have just made the events better, which has continued to grow the event. But I think there's this thing that I couldn't affect where people were inside for 2 years and suddenly they just want to get back to shows. So there's been a big uptake, and I think we've just been flavour of the year, if that makes sense, where people are like, oh, we haven't been to events in ages, so let's get out and let's do a marketing showcase, let's do a XYZ event, let's do a meetup, let's do a conference. So I think they've been busier, definitely, or we've certainly seen that. I think what's interesting, remote working has affected the way people attend events. And we run regional events around the country, kind of on people's doorstep is the idea. So it's easy for people to get in and out of them. But when you analyze the stats of national events, they've had a much slower route back to recovery. Because I think where traditionally they were commuting into London, and on your commute, popping into the Excel Centre to go to an event was an easy thing, or taking a day out of the office to go to that event. All of a sudden, where those commuters are at home, and they're not in the centre of London, or they're nowhere near the XL, the drive to go is a lot less. So we've seen a greater shift towards regional events that are easy to attend than your traditional 3-day National Expo in London, which I think has been quite interesting. It's certainly helped us where we are a regional event, but speaking to people who run national events, it's been a slower recovery for sure.
And that makes sense, right? Because I think we're at a point now where people maybe go in once, twice a week, if they are hybrid, maybe a bit more. But what I've noticed is they sort of plan the days they're in the office based around their social events in the evening. Like if they're going to London, it's because it's a Thursday, and Thursday's a new Friday. So if you're not running an event during a Thursday daytime, you're probably going to get less attendance than your sort of Wednesdays. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. It's not rocket science. I couldn't agree more. There was a time straight out of COVID where obviously organisers kind of financially were obligated to get back on the road, and they kind of needed to run their event that, when was it? Autumn 2021. And they kind of straight away got back on it. And I went to a few of the early ones just because I'm in the industry and I wanted to see what was happening. And the trains that previously from my commute from Southampton to London were dead. And they would have normally been round, right. And I could see people with their show guides normally, ready, getting ready for the event. And you could kind of follow the same journey over to the Excel. They were just dead. And then you get in the exhibition hall and we were all kind of like, oh my God, this is going to be tough. Nobody's coming back. And that's been very, very slow for national events. I think they're pretty much back to where they used to be now, but it's taken a long time to get there in comparison to regional events where, you know, they're not so far. There's less people. It's easier to get to. And especially with working from home and hybrid working, far more conducive to the calendar.
You mentioned hybrid working. Is there room for hybrid events, do you think, where you have one virtually and in person and you run them in dual? Is that possible?
Yeah, I think it totally is. I think from an organizer's point of view, you have to tread really carefully around the topic, because I think there's a danger. That's maybe the wrong word. I want people in the room. And I think sponsors and people who have got a stake in the game want people face to face. That's the goal. So I think when you start to offer people the chance to stay home and achieve the same that they could, you're putting attendees off coming. And driving the same value via hybrid or online is from somebody who's done it, much tougher than driving the same value in person. So I think for visitors, the hybrid thing is brilliant. Having the option to either go in if you want to or stay at home if it's too far, great. I can see it. For exhibitors, I think they're losing out, or they certainly are having to work harder for those offline delegates to get the same value. And I think for organisers, we're just listening to what's a stronger, more compelling argument to try and run the best conference possible. Sometimes that can feel like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, but you know, that's our job to kind of do. I think where we've kind of found it is we're more freely sharing content that we've generated from the event after the show. So for example, we're recording seminars and putting it on our YouTube channel to promote the next event. We never used to do that before. We used to kind of say, look, if you've missed out on the event and the live experience, well, you need to be there next time. But yeah, I think seeing what others are doing and learning from online events and hybrid events, we've more freely sharing content and giving that access to more people.
So it's kind of like, if you want to see it first, if you want to be the ones to see it in person, come along. Otherwise, you know, you can see it on YouTube, but it might be 3 weeks later. It might be two months later.
Yeah. Right? And Darren, being totally honest, I think I was doing it wrong beforehand. I think people want a taste of the action online, and that only fuels their desire to go to the live event. Even if it's the same talk, it's like when you see a stand-up comedian. You know, you see a few of their jokes online and then you think, oh, I'm going to go see them live when they're next in my town. I think that's exactly the same thing as live events. You see a really good speaker, even if it's the same speaker live, you're like, oh, I saw them online. I'm going to go sign up because I'll see them and more.
And the comedian thing is exactly what it is, right? You see some of the jokes. Sometimes you hear the same joke, but it's just funnier in person, right? It just is.
And that goes back to what I said at the start. That's an event because you've got other people there laughing. It's like that herd mentality where you're kind of all in the same joke and you're all buzzing off each other. It's exactly the same thing about events. And that's why we love being in the same room and not kind of over a screen. Not that you're not funny. Absolutely. Over a screen, Darren.
I'm not funny in real life either, to be honest. So, right, I think that's a good time to end it. How much of the coffee did you get through?
I'm half a pint down.
And if is it wrong to say you need to neck the lot?
Yeah, it's wrong.
I'm not
it's wrong. But if you clip this at any point, like, and you're sharing snippets, you just need to context it. Because I look so weird if we haven't kind of said, oh, he's drinking from a pint of coffee because it's pint with Pasia, and I'm just sipping from a pint of coffee. You're going to stitch me up there. I know.
I don't think we're going to edit this at all. And if you're listening to this, you know we haven't edited it, and that's what's going out. So, Ashley, thank you so much for joining me. Anything you want to say just before we end the show?
No, just thank you for the opportunity. I mean, shameless plug, if you're a marketeer and you want to come to live events, then check out our website, search for Marketing Showcase, and we're at a city near you. I can almost guarantee it.
Amazing. Perfect. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Dan.